You're listening to Girls with Grafts, a burn community podcast created by Phoenix Society for Burn Survivors, a leading nonprofit dedicated to supporting the burn community. In this podcast, we'll talk with burn survivors, share resources to help with supporting and improving burn recovery, and discuss how to prevent burn injuries. Here are your hosts, burn survivors and Phoenix Society's marketing team, Amber Wilcox and Rachel Kudlak.
Hello and welcome back to Girls with Grafts. I am Rachel Kudlak. I'm one of the hosts of the podcast. And today I'm joined by my lovely co-host, Amber Wilcox.
Hello again. It's so great to be here for another episode here in season four. I'm really excited. It's a lovely day to chat with another lovely guest of ours. So, I'm very excited for this guest. I had the chance to chat with her last week, and we were just talking about how much fun she is. So can't wait to get her on here. But without further ado, Rachel, do you want to go ahead and introduce our sponsor for today's podcast before we get started?
Of course. So today's podcast is powered by Johnson Controls. Johnson Controls is a global leader in fire safety and suppression technologies, helping to save lives and protect people around the world. You can learn more about Johnson Controls by visiting their website, www.johnsoncontrols.com.
And of course, as always, we'll put the in the show notes as well.
Yes, definitely. So as Amber mentioned, we're both really excited to have our guest on today. So today we are joined by Barbara Ann Hodge, who is a retired occupational therapist who worked for over 25 years on the burn unit at the HSC Hospital in Winnipeg. In the course of her work, she came to know many burn survivors who were dealing with changes to their appearance, and to their daily lives due to the burn injuries long after they left the hospital. To address these needs and alongside other burn unit staff, she helped establish the, I'm going to mess this up, and she told me how to say it before we started, the Mamingwe Burn Survivor Society in Manitoba, Canada in 2003, excuse me. Today,
this thumbs up. You got it right.
Perfect. Today, the organization is known as, now I have to say it again, Mamingwe Burn Society, Inc., and she continues in the role of board chair. She's also a member of the Canadian Burn Survivors Community and is the secretary of the board at the Canadian Skin Patient Alliance. She is a past board member of the Firefighters Burn Fund, and she is now she's retired from hospital work and enjoys spending her time with burn survivors and others as a volunteer through all of these various organizations. I don't know how she had time to come on our podcast, honestly, because she is also a mom to four grown kids and a grandmother to two and spends as much time as possible with her family. So thank you so much for joining us today, Barb.
Yes, well, thank you for having me. It's wonderful to see you. I usually just listen to your podcasts, but now I should go back and watch them on YouTube as well.
Well, Barb, it's so great to have you today. We are very excited. I personally don't know a lot about kind of your journey here in the burn survivor community. And so for those listening or watching us, I'd love it if you could just first tell us a little bit about how you got involved in the burn community so that those that are listening understand kind of how you're connected to us.
Right. Well, thank you. I was a student in occupational therapy, and I was 20 years old. So this is back in 1983, my very first clinical experience. For a month, I was placed with another therapist, and he worked on the burn unit, and he also treated hand injuries. So I'd had a year of university under my belt and occupational therapy school anyway, and here I go onto the burn unit and meeting burn survivors. Some are in hospital, treating some outpatients. So seeing patients who, you know, people who were farther down in their recovery journey, some up to a couple of years. And I was just fascinated. I was like, wow, I'd never known anybody who had a burn injury, but I was fascinated to learn about the healing and all the needs that people who are burnt need, you know, the things that they need and the challenges that they face. And so when I graduated, my first job, I did not get on at that hospital, but after a year of working, They called me and said, we remember that you were really interested in working with burn survivors. Would you like to come and work for us? And I said, sure. And so that was in 86, and I retired from there in 2015. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And in Canada, sorry, Amber, we get a year for mat leave when we have kids.
Yes, so I am familiar.
Yeah. So I had 4 years off when I had my children, but I would go back part-time. And I think that's one of the reasons why I could work for as long as I did, because part-time, it's maybe a little bit easier to cope than full-time, but I'm fascinated by people's healing journeys. I am fascinated by just how the human body can recover. And so in my hospital, we did it a little differently than I think in some of the big major burn centers. We were a small burn center, but if the person was admitted to the intensive care unit, I was their therapist. When they came to the burn unit, I was their therapist. When they were an outpatient, I was their therapist, and I would follow them on their healing journey until they were discharged from hospital care, when they were done with their pressure garments, etc. So that's my connection, is witnessing and walking alongside and seeing and hearing the challenges and the recoveries. And like I, in the little bio, a bunch of staff, it was the late 90s, I was just having my last kid, and a bunch of staff were like, in the States, sometimes they have these burn reunions, you know, we should do something here. And so in 1998 was the first time that the hospital staff kind of put together a afternoon gathering. And then out of that evolved our Burn Survivor Society. But we realized when people are out of the burn center and out of outpatient care, they're out there alone. And how are they going to meet another burn survivor? Because you ladies know, you know, it can be an ongoing journey, a lifelong journey, but being alone with nobody who understands, it can be really hard. So we have evolved out of the Mamingway Burn Survivor Society. You know, we kind of started pushing for something national, and out of our organization, the Canadian Burn Survivors Community, also got started around, I think it was 2007, Phoenix Society held a World Burn in Vancouver, in Canada, mm-hmm. that year. So Phoenix Society helped with that too. So that's my connection.
That's awesome. And I love that, and I don't know, maybe they still do this today, but I love that you were connected with the survivor early on and then you stayed with them. And I'm sure that's was great for you and rewarding for you to kind of see their healing journey, but I'm sure even too for the survivors and caregivers, it's so nice when you can build a friend and a relationship with, you know, your caregivers in the burn unit. So that's
awesome. Or at least to see a familiar face. I know for mm-hmm. me, like going to the doctor now, right, whether it's for the first time or it's overwhelming. And I think a lot of survivors feel that way, right, of like going in and having to go through like, here's why I was burned and here's what happened. Like, it's an exhausting process to go through with. And so to be able to continue to see a familiar face, I feel like puts your mind at ease a little bit too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I mean, people have invited me to their weddings, you know, some of my burn survivors, you know, my kids' graduation. We have one burn survivor. He was in a play. He's an electrical burn, so an amputee. And he was in a play playing a peg-legged, a guy who worked on a boat, you know, whatever. And I'm like, oh, I got to see this, you know, all my kids, my husband, we all went to see John in this play where he, you know, and I love it.
No, that's awesome. That connection. Well, I do want to ask a few more questions about your role, as an OT. I don't actually know if we've ever had an OT on the podcast before, so this is perfect. So now you're going to get all of our like medical kind of questions, but this one should be easy. What was one of your favorite parts about being an OT?
I guess when you're the OT, you want to figure out what does this person need to do every day and how can I help them make sure that they achieve all their goals, whatever they are, right? So it can be as basic as I need to feed myself. I want to be independent in getting dressed and toileting, or it could be, you know, I'm going back to work and I've had my burn and you know, how am I going to be able to walk around the, you know, the manufacturing floor or whatever. So I like to solve problems. I love to do puzzles, you know, so to me, it was that kind of a challenge. Okay. Like, given XYZ, how are we going to get you to do what you need to do during the day? So it's very creative to me. I think OTs have to be creative, and it's never boring. It's different, usually, addressing those needs of your patients, of your clients. So I liked that innovation. I did teach at the university for a few years, the OT, part of the OT course. And I said, you know, an OT is really a cheerleader. You know, I thought of myself as a bit of a cheerleader. So if somebody's in the burn unit and they're, you know, what, maybe they're not getting along with their nurse that day who's doing their dressings. Well, that, so then as the OT, you know, I would be like, how are we going to fix this? You know, let's talk, you know, like, so those are the kinds of things that, making sure that that survivor is getting exactly what they need at that time. Those are the kinds of things that I really tried to do, and that I found personally rewarding, because it's like, okay, I can make a difference here. What can we do right now? So I like doing that. Of course, when you're the occupational therapist, you want to also make sure that the person has good range of motion. You know, you're going to talk to them about how their scars might be healing. You're going to tell them about the pressure garments, which I'm sure you ladies remember, wearing your pressure garments and measuring them and ordering them. And dealing with people's functional abilities, physical abilities, but then also dealing with their psychological aspects of healing. In OT, you marry those two together, and I really like that.
I'm sure that also, though, comes with a challenge, or probably like there are some least favorite things, right, with that you probably had to overcome. And like, for those that maybe OTs listening out there, maybe be able to relate to what some of those challenges were. Like, I'm sure it was difficult, right, when things couldn't like improve or whatnot, correct?
Yeah, you certainly, you want to give people the tools they need. And hopefully you can find the tools that they will need. And you're right, you can't always. You hope that you're going to help this person. Probably for me was when we started running our conferences. You know, you guys call them a congress, we call them a conference. I don't know why. when you have a conference and you think, oh, I've got this, you know, keynote speaker coming, oh, so and so should be here to listen to this, and then they wouldn't come to the conference, right? I'd be like phoning, come on, you gotta come, you know. Those kinds of experiences. The beauty for me of working all those years and working through all those stages is when the next person is admitted to intensive care, given their injury, you already know, okay, I know how their healing is going to go for them. And you just hope for the best. And you hope that, they're not going to get infections and their grafts are going to take and all those things. But you just hope, yeah, that they're going to be receptive to whatever tools that we have. And hopefully we have the right tools, right, to make sure that they become independent, self-confident, and all those things. Did I answer your question?
Yeah, no, I think that it's so and true, because, right, like, we're, as a survivor, we're only as competent as we let ourselves be, right? Like I have to be willing to help myself. But I also think there's a caregiver aspect too, right? I know in the beginning, I remember my OTs very good, very well, because I was very close with all of them. And I know, like, I was only as good as they pushed me to be, but also my husband pushed me to be, right? Like, if I just gave up and I could be like, no, I don't really want to get up today, right? Or, but my husband would say, no, you're going to go get that drink yourself. Or the OTs would say, like, hey, you've been babying her too much. She's walking funny. Like, you need to make her go and do it. And I had to want to, right? Like, because if I don't have that will and strive to kind of get better, sometimes I think that can also be detrimental, I'm sure, too. So, like, you're only as able to kind of heal as you're willing to let yourself be, I think. And I think that's, I'm sure that's a struggle, right? Because some of us have a longer healing path than others. So,
And being able to reflect to someone to say, okay, Amber, I know this lady from 10 years ago that I treated, and this was her course of treatment, and this is what she did, you know? So, always, you know, thinking of what's the carrot that will for Amber, right? You know, you know, what do I have to say but I took that really seriously, you know, to say, like, I've already known people who have gone through something similar. So that means I have a good idea of how this might play out for you. And we're going to make sure that you try to get to be the best you, you know, sure, that sure. you can be.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's so important. Just knowing, I mean, in every aspect, I think, of the burn survivor journey, knowing that others have been on this path before and have overcome is just so, so important. So kind of going off of that, what are some of like the common questions or concerns that you often heard from survivors or even their caregivers too?
Yeah, probably the main one early on in recovery is, when am I going to be normal? Mm. When am I going to get back to normal? And then it would be like, okay, plug in speech number 10. There is no going back to normal. That's the bad news. But here's the good news. There's new normal. You can have new normal, which mm-hmm. is different from old normal, but it can be just as good or better. Because let me mm-hmm. tell you about this person that I knew from 5 years ago. Like, you know what I mean? That was kind of my approach. So that was, yeah. People always wanting to know, I just want this to be over. I want my life to go back to the way it was. And, you know, mm-hmm. like when you have a baby, right? There's maybe around a 5 month age when you're like, yeah. Like, when can I just have that evening with that glass of wine with my partner in front of, you know, the TV mm-hmm. and I don't have to listen for crying. And, you know, those days are gone, but they will come back eventually mm-hmm. in 18 or 20 years. Maybe not mm-hmm. the crying, but yeah, you know.
Although sleeping, right? We're doing that right now. Like, he wasn't sleeping all of last month. And I just was like, are we ever going to sleep again? And my husband's like, I'm sure we will. Like, eventually we'll sleep again. But there are like those moments, right? And I relate that to being a survivor. And I think that's what's helping me get through, right? Is like, okay, there were those times where it was really tough. And there were those times that like, I was like, oh my gosh, I don't know if I can do that, right? Like this is difficult. But eventually like it does get better, but it, like you're looking Absolutely. For that instant fix, right? Like I just mm-hmm. want to sleep now. And same thing with like, I just want to be the same that I was then. And that can be a really, really hard realization, I think, as a survivor, to be like, okay, but I can't walk, or I can't, you know, can't jump in a pool. Like these are things that like I want to do right now and I can't, or stop being itchy. And so I think I agree with you. I think there are like, we all go through that, right? Whether it's as a survivor or we go through a tough time in our lives, like we're like, oh my gosh, I just want to be the way it was. And I think, like you said, it's that hard realization of like, okay, this is a new adventure and change is really hard. And so sometimes like we have to adapt, but yeah, it does get better. It just takes time.
Yes. And like as a new parent, but as a burn survivor, it can take years to get your energy mm-hmm. back to you. Sort of feel like I'm me again, right? Mm-hmm. I'm me again. I'm not this burn survivor. I'm not giving so much mental attention to my recovery and I'm, mm-hmm. you know, I am getting
focusing on that all the time. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So that is a very normal, you know, conversation that I would have had over the years. And, you know, once we started the Burn Survivor Society, obviously a lot of times those conversations didn't take place in the hospital because we would be, mm-hmm. you know, be having in-person support groups or whatever. But yeah, just knowing there is hope for the future, but the future is going to look different. And if you lost a limb, it ain't coming back. But we're gonna work through it. So that was a common challenge, I think, that we faced. Mm-hmm. I personally found it hard to deal with. Again, this sounds weird, maybe, but people who are in pain, right? It's hard mm-hmm. to watch somebody suffer. And you ladies both know there's pain when you're burned. And so that you know, I carried that, I think, heavy, and a lot of healthcare professionals do. Somehow I think doctors maybe are a little bit better because they know when they become a doctor, you know, you're going to, you know, you're going to cause pain, right?
You signed up for that. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So one thing back in the 90s when we were still at our hospital anyway, doing the burn baths, you know, one of my things that I kind of took on was I would do guided imagery or some kind of relaxation technique with people along with their meds to try to help them through those experiences. But yeah, you know, when is the pain going to stop? that's a hard question to answer. Of course, it's so individual, but that's something that is still hard for me to remember mm-hmm. people suffering and witnessing mm-hmm. it and trying to help them. And even my hands causing the pain sometimes, right? Like you burnt your mm-hmm. hand, I'm going to make your new splint today, but first I've got to stretch out your joints to get you in that optimal position. And then, you know, I'll distract you while I'm stretching your hands and I'll ask you 8 million questions in the next 10 minutes, you know?
And, right.
Yeah.
Was it challenging to balance the, like, I want to tell the survivor the truth that your normal isn't coming back. Like, I guess, how did you balance always giving people the truth, but also not wanting to cause them more pain either by being, I guess, too harsh, even though you're not necessarily being harsh, but maybe it could come off that way to the survivor?
Yes. Truth, you didn't always get it right. You tried. Once you got to know your burn survivor, you tried to, you made a guess. How much reality will this person accept right now? And lots of times it was over several conversations. I can remember one of my most, I think, satisfying moments was at a burn conference when someone who I treated was on a panel talking about her recovery. And she's like, and then this one morning I woke up and I realized there's a new normal. I can just embrace new normal. That idea had never occurred to me. And I'm like, okay, so I told her that, but she doesn't remember that I told her that. She think, you know, so in other words, over several conversations, she slowly accepted it until, and I love that. I love that because I empowered her, right? And as an OT, that was really important. And she didn't say, well, Barb Hodge told me this, and maybe other staff had too, right? But she finally internalized what she needed to do, which was to accept, I'm not going to have the range of motion that I used to have or the appearance that I used to have. So there's that.
And I'm sure there are times it didn't go. I know I talk about Susan Smith, my burn doctor, and I'll never forget. We had this, it was the beginning of COVID, and we had this trip to Hawaii planned, and I had it in my head, like, we were going to go to Hawaii, like, whether or not, like, I felt better, like, we were going to go. And she was like, I just want to tell you right now, like, you're not, you know what I mean? Like, you're not going to Hawaii. And that was just like devastating, right? Like I was, and in that moment, like I was like, I definitely don't feel like I wanted to hear that, right? Like that was, and I was so upset, right? And maybe it should have been like a gradual, right? Like for me, maybe I needed like a, hey, like, you know, let's get through this week before we find out. But she gave me that like tough, no, you're not going, right? You're not doing that right now. And that was tough to swallow. But I also think sometimes that's what I needed to hear, right? To accept that truth. So I do think that there's a medium, right? Between like, we can delicately walk or dance around it. But then sometimes, like, even though I don't think I needed that truth, like I took that hard reality and then was like, okay, we're moving on. Now I'm going to get back to healing. Right. Like, so I think there's some people need it, even if they don't think they do. Like, I was like, oh, why couldn't she have softened that blow a little bit? Right. Like, but she came in and like told me the truth and I was like, okay, well, let's like move on now. Right. Like that we will, well, that will be a goal, right? That's a goal for the future. So, I can imagine how hard your job is, because I think for me, I'd be like worried that like, right. I would tell somebody that and then they'd be like hysterical or like be like, you know, hey, let's talk about it next week. And next week came like, so there's that false hope too. So I can see how difficult that would be to like, I play out that scenario, right? Like what if she had just been delicate to me? I probably wouldn't have like been determined to like get through harder, right? Like, so I don't know. It's an interesting, I can only imagine how difficult your job was, because it's a lot.
Well, and it's a lot. I mean, yeah, people will get angry, right? I've been called lots of different names, bad words that don't belong on podcasts, because somebody's, you know, they're angry. So I'm the person sitting in front of them. So they're going to take it out on me. And I get it. Yeah, you just try your best at the time to be as realistic as you can. And saying, you know, my gut tells me, or based on my experience. And I remember once I had a patient who, you know, was still in intensive care, but was talking, and it's like, am I going to lose my fingers? I'm like, well, I don't know. But of course I knew. Yeah. Right. I'm like, I can't tell you. No, but I need to know. And then, but you got to talk to your doctor. Well, by what you're saying, it sounds like if you're telling me, you know, I'm going to lose my fingers. I'm like, well, it's not my job to tell you that, but you know, you take from it what you want. And then afterwards, I remember the nurse coming to me and saying, "You told him we were going to amputate." I'm like, "I did not tell him that." You know what I mean? He inferred it. But no, at that point, am I going to lie? No, I'm not going to say, "Oh, they're going to be fine," because I'm not the person who's supposed to tell you. So there's that too. Right. You want to be realistic and not lie to people.
Right. Because that's also not fair either. Right.
Yeah.
No.
You got to balance. You got to be like good cop, bad cop all at the same time with the tough love.
Yeah, exactly.
And it's hard to swallow.
Yeah. Well, before we switch gears a little bit, I did just want to ask too, you know, do you have any advice or tips that you would want other OTs or even just other burn care teams to know?
Oh boy. I worked with some really strong, amazing people over my career, and a lot of them are still working on the burn unit. Yeah, I think when you have a day when you've talked to a patient and it hasn't gone well, and you are driving home and you're like, "Oh, how could I have done that better?" Right? I hurt that person. It's to remind yourself, you didn't hurt that person. You were dealing the best at that time with the tools that you had. And so don't feel like you failed them, right? Do your best every day. When I went to work, yes, I tried to do my best, but did I always give people what they needed? Well, no. It's the same thing with being a parent in a way, right? You're not always there 100% for your kid with exactly what they need at that time. So be easy on yourself when you work with people. And probably the most important thing is make sure you find support for your own heart and your own feelings. And I worked with a really good team that we could call, you know, back in the days when you didn't have cell phones, we could call each other after work, or we could arrange to go for a lunch and talk about things, because that's really important, is to not, you know, take your own time for self-care and not burn yourself out. Because what we do with burn survivors, they're going through the most horrible thing that's ever happened to them, and we're witnessing it every day, and we're trying our best to help them. But we also have to make sure that we take care of our own selves so that we're there for the next person, and we don't get, you know, jaded, nasty. Because if you're not feeling some kind of empathy for that burn survivor, you might not be right for that job anymore, right? You have to have compassion, which means that you're vulnerable. I learned that about myself when I think that was probably about 2007, 2006, 2007, we had a social worker come to one of our conferences to speak on vicarious trauma. And they put up the slide with all the symptoms. And I'm like,
me. check.
I have all of those. Hypervigilance amongst my children, you know, when they're gonna have a bath because the water's too hot, and you know, yeah, like lack of sleep and anxiety when you hear a loud noise and blah blah blah. And I'm like, oh, okay. And so then I did get some help for myself. So I had some counseling. Mm-hmm. That was the best thing that I could have done.
Yeah. No, definitely. I mean, that's great advice really for everyone too, but especially for the
caregivers could benefit from that too. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. But from that caregiver role, I mean, the only way you're going to be able to best support the survivor is if you're supported yourself. So, you know, whether you are a caregiver, a parent, or a spouse, or the burn care team at the hospital, it's so important for everyone to be taking care of themselves so you can provide the best support possible.
Absolutely.
I was watching a television show last night even about, like, it was an individual that was a caregiver and how burnt out that person was, right, by caregiving. And you forget that, like, you're giving of yourself all of the time. And I think it's the same, right, for, like, first-time moms, right? You're, like, constantly giving that sometimes it is okay to, like, take a step away. Like, I'll go to my husband and say, I just need, like you said, 20 minutes in the bath with a glass of wine tonight. Like, I just need time for myself, because then I can recharge and come back, like, a better version of myself, right? Rather than, like, letting myself get tired and whatnot. And I think it's the same for a caregiver. Like, it's really important to recognize, like, I know you want to be there all the time, but, like, it is okay to step away and ask for help, right? Like, just to say, like, absolutely, hey, I need to run an errand to the store for an hour. Can you come and watch, right, the survivor or sit with them, just because I need a minute, right? Like, and it's nothing against that person other than, like, it's a lot. It is that secondary trauma. And so I think caregivers sometimes forget to recognize their own, like you said, like, need for that. My husband, my husband needed it, right? My husband needed a chance to like have a minute. And sometimes you don't always get that. So it's a lot to swallow. So I appreciate you saying that for sure.
Well, after we had our fourth child, I think he was about two, and I created Barb's day out in the world alone. And it would be a weekday. My husband would be at work and I would hire a babysitter and I would be like, okay, go to the bookstore, like have a coffee, you know, like walk in the park. Like it didn't really involve a lot of money, but it was just like, and I would only do it one day a year, but I had Barb's day out in the world alone.
Yes. I really still need that. I like, or just an hour, right? Like I just need to go. I've said to my husband multiple times, I just need a hot shower. Like sometimes it's like, I need a hot uninterrupted, you know, Barb, as a mom, like I need a hot shower uninterrupted where there's not a like, right. Like I'm not being watched or like, yes, I need a hot shower.
I'm not like, I heard something.
Yeah. Like did he start crying? Yes. So, or have like the baby monitor in the shower with you. So yes. Yeah, sometimes you do. And again, that goes for caregivers too, right? Like sometimes I just need to not be on call, right? Or like available 24/7. It's just having the think space. So I think that's really, really important. Well, I want to switch gears a little bit. You helped establish, I'm not going to make Rachel say it again, the Mumming Way Burn Survivor Society. Can you tell us a little bit about that group and maybe why you came up with the name that Rachel can't pronounce? So
yeah. So it's an Ojibwe word, which is an Indigenous language, and it means butterfly. So like I mentioned, in 1998, the staff brought burn survivors who were long discharged together. Was kind of before privacy laws, when we could just dip into the admission book and write down their names and addresses, and we mailed them snail mail invitations. And after doing that pretty much every year till 2003, in the meantime, about 2000, we invited some burn survivors to join the planning committee because we realized that they should have input, and some family members, caregivers joined the planning committee. And then we were like, well, our local burn fund was funding us, but we could find other sources of funding. So we have to be an official organization and we need a name. So we came up with this name. There was an Indigenous elder who worked at our hospital, and one of our committee members sat down with him and asked. And so he came up with the name.
I love that.
The Mingwei, which means butterfly. And there's a whole thing on our website about it. But the simple explanation is a butterfly starts as a caterpillar, and a caterpillar makes its own cocoon. So the cocoon is white and it's like a burn survivor in the dressings, right? It's sort of that imagery. And then the dressings are removed, the caterpillar emerges, but of course now it's a butterfly. And the process of the caterpillar emerging from its cocoon, it has to squeeze through a small hole, and it has its wings now, and the wings have to be sort of compressed so all the fluid goes into the butterfly's wings so that it can fly. And it's a struggle, right? Kind of like being born for a baby. It's probably not that easy. Thank goodness we don't remember it. So that imagery of that butterfly's struggle to emerge mirrors the pattern that burn survivors experience. So that's our imagery. And then there's the stages of a butterfly's life as well. So that's the name that we chose. Yes, lots of people have trouble pronouncing it, so don't worry about that. But we love the image. You know, we got our logo, and we've been going basically since 2003. So we do annual conferences for burn survivors, usually a day and a half or a couple of day conference here in Manitoba. And we have a scholarship program. You know, one of the good things, I guess, to come out of the pandemic is that now we do online support groups monthly, which before we didn't. We did them in person, but of course when that stopped, we switched to online, and we're going strong with that. And we do a fundraiser every spring. We called it the Go for the Burn Run, which is a timed 10K, 5K run. And we promote it within the burn survivor community, you know, just to promote fitness, health, wellness. Oh, sorry. And it's also a 3K walk, because not everybody wants to do 5K, 10K. And of course it's open to anybody to participate, and they pay registration fees, so we make money at that. So and it's sort of our face to the community. So that's sort of who we are and what we do. And we're going strong.
I love that. I love the name too. That's awesome.
Mm-hmm. No, and we'll make sure we have your website and more information in our show notes too for listeners who want to get involved. So, and I know you're also connected with the Canadian Burn Survivors community. So are they the same thing? They're different, they're connected. Can you tell us a little bit more about
that? Yeah, so they are a separate organization. Sorry, I talked over. Yeah, so I have lots of email addresses from Mingway, for Canadian Burns, for my own. There are, like in the States too, in Canada, there are burn funds in different cities that sort of organically, you know, were created by firefighters. There are different support groups for burn survivors, but they were all kind of independent. You know, there's burn camps. So I know there's an Atlantic burn camp, right? I know there's the BC Firefighters Professional Burn Fund, and they run programs, and they have all kinds of, well, like Phoenix, they have several paid staff people. The Mingway is run by volunteers. Canadian Burn Survivors Community is also run by volunteers. Anyway, we knew about all these groups that were out there. So then a bunch of us came together in 2007 and we said we should start a Canadian Burn Survivors Community, which is supposed to be more of an umbrella. So we have a website. We give different groups the, I guess, the naming right for a Canadian conference. We also do virtual support groups and other things, because it makes sense to have an umbrella organization instead of Calgary Burn Treatment Society is doing this. You know, they're doing a, I don't know, like a car wash fundraiser or something. And then over here in Toronto, you know, there's Camp Bucko, which is burn camp for kids. And they're doing a different kind of a fundraiser. Who's like, hey, guys, you should all be aware of what everybody's doing, because first of all, you can eliminate duplication, but also then you come together as a community. So Canadian Burn Survivors Community, like Mingway, is a not-for-profit. We're going to be working on our charitable status in Canada soon, but we operate on very little money. It's all done by volunteers, we just try to help people, right? So when you're out there on the website, or your website is out there on the World Wide Web, people contact you, people who need help. So there's all kinds of ways that we're connecting with people. And of course, Phoenix Society is the model that we'd all like to be, right? We'd all like to grow and be that big and strong. And but you guys are there helping us as well. So So Canadian Burn Survivor Community is truly Canadian. We have board members right from Victoria, British Columbia, all the way to Halifax, Nova Scotia, which is far. We span four time zones. So when we have board meeting, it's always like, okay, I'm right in the middle. So it's like, it's noon for me, then it's 2 o'clock for them, and it's 10 in the morning for them. And, you know, it's cool. It's fun.
That's awesome. Well, yeah. Barb, I know we met just a few weeks ago at the Canadian Burn Survivors Community peer support chat, where we discussed what it was like to host a podcast. And we actually, before we got on and started chatting today, we talked a little bit about like what that experience was like for us. And I know Rachel and I had a chance to reflect after that call, and just talked about how much we loved just your support chat and all that you offered. So I'd love to just hear from you kind of what it is you're doing with that community support chat. It was fun. Rachel and I had a great time. We talked after, like, as a survivor, sometimes what we need is not always just that, right, talk about our injury support, but also just a chance to have fun and connect with other survivors that are like us. And so Rachel and I got a chance to just, I think, connect in a setting different than our normal podcast. And we just really enjoyed the chance to kind of learn from others and connect with our community again. So I'd love for you to just tell the listeners, like, what can I expect from the, you know, anybody can join, right? The virtual support group.
Absolutely.
Not those just in Canada. So it was really fun to get to see another group. I know I've been an avid joiner of the Phoenix Society groups, but to join another group and laugh and have fun with some familiar faces and some new faces as well.
Yeah, anybody can join. We're on the Phoenix Society's calendar, and it's every second Wednesday that we hold the groups. We try to have a range of open groups where there's no topic to something planned. So when you guys were on last week, we Kyle and I, Kyle Hines, who's on the board of the Canadian Burn Survivors Community, we got together in October and we were trying to think of, you know, topics that people would be interested in. And I'm like, oh, I love listening to podcasts. I've found all these different, you know, podcasts for burn survivors. Let's bring on the hosts and talk to them about it. So we do try to keep it light, because I always think at the end of the day, we're all people. You know, I'm a grandmother. People will see me and they'll go, oh, she looks like a grandma, right? And that's great. I am a grandma, but I'm also other things. Just like burn survivors are many things. You work for the Phoenix Society. So in a way, you've partnered your burn survivor identity with your work identity. But of course, you're probably sisters, you're children of adult parents, you're a parent, Amber. I don't know, Rachel, if you are. I'm sorry.
No, just a dog mom.
Oh, dog mom. Okay, there you go. So yeah. So, you know, we are all of these things, and I try to bring that to the support group. So we do sometimes have serious conversations. People will share things they're struggling with, and that's important. But I think it's important for us to bond as a community, and we can do that in a way that's respectful, but also fun. And that's probably maybe just a little bit my personality. I remember one of the very first serious burn patients that I treated. So back in about 1987, his face was burnt and swollen, and his eyes were swollen shut. So of course, after a few days, the swelling went down and he could open his eyes. But at the time that he was in, it was a young man, and I could tell he was terrified, right? And we were in doing dressing changes. And I remember he said, I'm really scared. I can't see anything. So I said, I will describe to you what we're doing. So I kind of did this monologue. And then after a while I said, oh, and by the way, this nurse that here, Karen, that we're working with, she looks just like Dolly Parton. She's got the whole, and of course she didn't, right? But I just said something really to ease the tension. And when I came out of the room, this nurse looks at me and she goes, you were too flippant in there. Like, that is not appropriate. And I'm like, no, but I think that guy was scared. And it was about 5 years later, I reconnected with him and he told me, I thought I was going to die. I couldn't see anything. And so I didn't know how to say, am I going to die? So I, you know, said, I can't see anything. And when you started joking around with me, I realized, oh, if I was going to die, they wouldn't be talking to me like that. So I kind of take that attitude, right? Like, is it fun to talk about your burn injury recovery? Probably not. It's right. Serious work, but it can be done in a way that is human and respectful to everybody. So that's what I try to bring, because, and another, I guess, example is, you know, so often when I've had a burn conference or whatever, I talk to a neighbor or somebody from church or whatever, and they're like, oh, a group of burn survivors. That sounds so depressing. Like, you know, I'm like, are you kidding me? It's the best thing ever. A group of burn survivors in a room that come together, whether it's World Burn Congress or a Canadian conference, like, you're burned, you're going to this conference, you walk into this room, nobody's going to stare at you because of your scars or because you look different. Yeah. Everybody knows why you're there. You're there to kind of work on us as a group. And like, it's the most positive, empowering atmosphere that you can imagine. It's like, to me, when I start one of my conferences, I'm like electric and the air is electric. And I'm like, yeah, we got this, right? Mm-hmm. So that's kind of the energy, I guess, being older and being at this for many years. That's what that has taught me. And so, yeah, I think people will come back to the burn support group more frequently. If it is a little bit lighter, it's okay to make a joke. I'm sure, you know, I'm not saying that yours is too heavy, so please don't take that from my comments. But
there are times, right, where it can be heavy, right? A Phoenix Society, like, yeah, has sometimes a lot of newer survivors, right? We tend to attract a newer audience. So it can be like they have a lot of questions, right? Like, new survivors have a lot of questions. And so sometimes having a group of not as new survivors, right, or survivors that have been around, I know, and depending, right, on the week with the Phoenix Society chat, I think sometimes it is a little bit lighter because we all know each other and we are all friends and we've seen each other. But if there's a new survivor on, sometimes that can be a heavier conversation, right? Questions, yes, like, am I going to be okay, right? Or things, or there are some right mental health challenges that come along with being a new survivor and even a well-established survivor. But I think I really, and Rachel and I chatted about this after, like Rachel and I aren't in the stage where we want to talk about our burns as much anymore. So mm-hmm. last week was fun for us to connect in a place where we could just laugh about what's going on right now, or like, yeah, I'm tired, right? Or like, we're doing mm-hmm. our podcast and we have challenges with our podcast. And so it was really nice to just connect with our community, but not have to go to a place where, yeah, we're mm-hmm. we are other people and we're tired sometimes, or we're just right. Run down and we need to talk about something light. And so we really appreciated getting to join. So I think for me, I'm very set in joining the same, where I was like, I joined this, I'm dedicated to this, you know, support group, and this is the only one I can join. And I think it helped me also realize, like, I don't always have to join the same support group. I can go mm-hmm. and meet other support groups, and maybe I'll get something else out of a different support group, because there's a different, so I would encourage you, think, to just try another support group, right? Like, you don't have to always go to the same one, because I think it's important. You can get something different out of, and I saw a lot of my other friends who joined the Phoenix support group with me on your support group as well. And I'm like, I think I'm just very one track minded. And so I'm like, very much like, this is the one I've always done. So this is, mm-hmm. but it's okay to like, go try another support group and maybe you'll get something different out of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, and it's, no, go ahead, Barb.
No, I was just going to say, and there's a need for all kinds of support groups, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Because somebody might come to this one and say, oh, that was a bit goofy. I didn't like that. It didn't suit my mood today or whatever. So right. Sorry, go ahead, Rachel.
No, and just kind of going off of that too, you know, when we talk about the World Burn Congress or your Canadian conference or any, you know, burn survivor gathering, there's a reason why everyone says it's like a family reunion, because that's just how we interact and hang out. It's, yes, we talk about our burn stories and our burn injuries and the highs and the lows, but we also talk about a lot of other things. We're not just straight talking about our burn injury 24/7 while we're at these events. It's a lot more exactly. fun than that.
One of the most powerful things I think I ever saw was it in 2009, Phoenix Society did a World Burn in New York? I'm not sure if I have the right year.
Yeah, we did do one in New York. Yeah, I'm not sure on the year either.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So I was there and it was like the closing banquet and they had a live band. And, you know, when the dancing started, like there was like 900 people and like 700 of them squished onto the dance floor and people are just like dancing. And it was just such a high, right? Like everybody was just so happy. Like the conference was concluding, we're all feeling safe and people were dancing and expressing themselves. And after about an hour, I was just sitting watching and I looked over and there was the serving staff that worked at the hotel. They're all in their uniforms and they were kind of all along this wall and they were watching and they were dancing too. And I thought, okay, like if you're banquet serving staff in a New York hotel, you probably shouldn't be dancing when you're supposed to be clearing tables. But they were so moved and they felt that energy and that empowerment that, you know, yeah, this is a safe group of people and everybody is enjoying themselves. And I remember, and it wasn't like 5 minutes, like it was a good 15 minutes that they were all dancing along. And that gave me such joy because it's like, that's the power of healing. That's the power of the burn survivor community. Because we're all working on ourselves to be happy, to be bringing to the world our best selves, even if we've suffered this horrible injury. And then other people see that. And then you've healed them, right? Like it's the full circle thing, the circle of life or something. I don't know. Anyway, it was just so moving. I have that image and it's like joy.
Yeah. Well, I will say, I think some of the burn survivor folks that I am friends with are some of the most genuine humans I've ever met, but also the closest friendships, right, I've had, because we have that special bond and I can be honest and be myself and mm-hmm. they're not going to judge me for that because, you know, we've been through some really crappy things together. So, it is a very special community. And like, I've always heard this, you know, all of the support chats, like it's the best community you never wanted to be a part of. But it is very true to say that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely.
Well, Barb, I do know we're coming up on our time here, but I did want to ask, you know, you are retired, you're a grandmother, you're also a mom, you're very busy, you're very involved with the burn community. What keeps you going? Like, what drives you to be as involved as you are?
I love it. it's my passion, I guess. What drives me? Partly, I would say, from all those years of working and witnessing the pain, right? And like I said before, with my hands sometimes causing pain, I kind of feel like I'm making amends, right? I'm giving back something that's better than the painful part. So partly, I guess it's that. I am in love with the community. I have so many friends that I've made, that I respect, that I see on a regular basis. I have, you know, young adults that I've been like, oh, you're a burn survivor. Oh, you were born in 92. Cool. I didn't have a kid in 92. I'm your burn mom. You know, I love that. I love being everybody's burn mom because I just, like I say, I'm fascinated with people's healing. I'm just hopeful that I can help people. But it truly is my passion. I mean, even when we started Mamingway, my kids were still, I guess, relatively small. We'd have a planning committee meeting at my house. And, you know, sometimes it would be like, oh, I'll just make us a simple supper. You know, two or three burn survivors, a couple other hospital staff are coming to the house. And I tell my kids, okay, so so-and-so is coming. He has no arms because he was burnt in an electrical burn. And we're going to have dinner. And he's got those hooks. So you can ask questions, but don't stare, you know, those kinds of things. So here we all are at my big dining room table. You know, there's 12 or 14 of us at the table. And, you know, people are, you know, using their, well, in this case, I don't want to say the person's name. I didn't get permission, but, you know, this person is using his hooks and my kids are asking respectful questions. And then, you know, to me, like, so my kids got to learn from this. That's really cool, right? Mm-hmm. They will go out in the community and they will not see somebody who looks different and be like, ooh, you know, that they're going to be curious. They're going to be respectful. So I think all of that is what charges my batteries, because I get a lot of energy from participating in the burn survivor community. And eventually I will, you know, go on to retire, but I'm 61 right now. I just turned 61 last month. So I got a few years yet when I really want to keep doing what I'm doing. So I'm very lucky that I found something that I'm enjoying, that I'm passionate about, and that gives back to me.
That's absolutely beautiful. We really appreciate you sharing that with us. Well, Barb, I know we're got one more question or one more thing we want to open up for you before we ask our final partner questions of the podcast. So is there anything that you want to share with our listeners about whether it's your community or anything else before we wrap up today?
Yeah, Mamingway Burn Society, we're going to host a conference this fall, October 25th and 26th, full day Friday, full day Saturday. Registration will be open online. We will post it on Phoenix Society's calendar. Everyone is welcome to come. We're doing things a little different this year. There's no Canadian conference happening in 2024, so this is not... It's happening in Canada, but I can't call it a Canadian conference, if you know what I mean. It's not sanctioned by the Canadian Burn Survivors Committee. So please know that everybody is welcome. And I also shout out to Phoenix Society. You guys do amazing work. So, yeah.
Well, thank you. We appreciate it. And, you know, we're not having a conference this year either. So if folks are looking to gather in person and to maybe take a trip, I know we have a lot of U.S. listeners, but it's not far away. Could be a great trip for me this fall.
We're in Manitoba and it's straight north of North Dakota. If you leave the U.S. border and drive north for 1 hour,
just you'll 1 find hour, it. Dakota,
you'll get there. You'll get there. Just knock on a door and say, do you know where the Burn Survivor Conference is? And they'll be like, yeah, we got you.
Well, Barb, we always ask two final questions at the end of a podcast. So our first question for you today is what advice for this season's question. What advice did you want to give caregivers or loved ones? I think we've talked a lot about this on this podcast, but any extra advice that you want to give a loved one or a caregiver that may be listening as an OT, right? Former OT, anything you want to share today?
Obviously taking care of yourself is the most important thing. And just know that, as time goes on, I think things do get easier. You know, when you're having a bad day, things are going to get easier eventually, maybe not tomorrow, but eventually it will get easier if you're, if you're having a bad day.
Yeah. Great advice for everyone. Definitely. Mm-hmm. So, well, our final question today, it's the Phoenix Partner question, which today is sponsored by Johnson Controls, a world leader in creating safe, healthy, and sustainable spaces. So their question is, what is one thing that always brings a smile to your face, no matter how tough your day has been? Doesn't have to be burn survivor related either.
Yeah. Probably my grandkids. shout out to my grandkids, Jackson and Sophia. They're twins. I babysat them a lot when they were little before they started school.
How old are Jackson and Sophia?
Oh, sorry. Yeah, they're turning 8 next month. In grade 2, second grade. In Canada, we say grade 2. You guys say second grade. But yeah, so they're big now. But yeah, no, my grandkids, lots of room in my heart for them. And they know that I'm a pushover. So if they want, they get it.
So being a grandma's for you, right?
Yeah, that's that exactly.
Like, I hear that very often in this household. Like, that's why I'm a grandma. And I'm like, okay, that seemed a little different than when we were children, but okay.
Yes, learning about your mom as your mom, as opposed to when she's the grandma, they're totally different.
Very different.
So my grandkids will always bring a smile to my face, no matter how bad my day has been. They're awesome.
Well, they have one amazing grandma.
They sure do.
Well, thank you very much. This was absolutely my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. Really appreciate it.
Thank you so much.
Very much. Bye, Barb.
Thanks.
Okay. Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thanks so much for tuning in to this episode of Girls with Grafts. If you are enjoying this content, please feel free to rate, subscribe, and leave a review wherever you listen to your podcasts. This helps others find the show, and we greatly appreciate it. Thanks again for listening, and we'll catch you in the next episode.